by facts and driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now, here are your hosts, Carrie Simpson and Mark Hashek.
Mark Hashek.
Carrie Simpson.
How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Good. We've never met on the set before.
That is true.
This is like our first date, Mark.
It really is. I'm kind of nervous.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where are you going to drive me to?
Let me think about that.
And no GPS allowed. Okay?
Very good.
This is all intellectual-driven show. You know, this is strictly the mind power here.
I like that.
Yeah, no tom-toms.
I don't even know what that is.
You don't have one of those talking devices?
No.
Neither do I.
No, my second car is a tow truck, so...
Ah.
Yeah, nothing that updated.
Always on standby, is it?
That's right.
So, this is kind of exciting because we haven't done a show before. I was going through the old archives. You've been here first as our guest, and you wowed us so much with your brilliance, and you just kind of fit in really good to the Roadkill gang. Then you started co-hosting with Terry O'Neill.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
That was great. Terry is a ball of energy. And he's got a lot of wisdom, a lot of smarts, and it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, you can't go on too long because he will listen to this eventually, and then he'll remind me constantly.
Hi, Terry.
You didn't hear any of that, Terry O'Neill. And now it's our turn. So tonight we've got a big show, Mark. We've got lots of interesting situations that are affecting citizens, people.
Right.
A little bit later on the show, we're going to have Zabeth Bain. Many of you in our audience will be familiar with the Bain story, the apprehension of their four children.
Mm-hmm.
They've mobilized that effort now into a conference that they have put together, medical and health experts coming. It's going to be evidence-based medicine and social investigation conference. And you know what, Mark? I'm kind of excited about what we're going to be talking about then. Doug Christie, their lawyer, and he's well-known in this part of the world, sort of the people's lawyer, if you will. He takes on those hard cases that a lot of people don't want to have to drain their emotional energy with, because cases involving the apprehension of children and families, you can't help but get your heart a little bit involved. It's not the typical stuff that approaches people before the courts. So he's very involved in this conference as well. He's going to be speaking at it. But one of the things for those of us who work as an advocate in this area continually astonishes me is the lack of proper research that goes into these cases before the children are taken.
On behalf of the government.
On behalf of the government. You know, it is definitely child abuse when you take children from their home, at least healthy homes. And in this case, you know, I've often said the largest child abuser in the province is the Ministry of Children and Families.
Mm.
And it's becoming increasingly known as the Ministry of Destruction. And when we hear about the Bain case and why they're doing the conference, mid-show we're going to have Derek Hoare back on. He's got an update about his case, a case that just... Well, it's received considerable publicity now, and my hat is off to Derek. He has used the social media, the internet, all the things that we use here at Roadkill to get word out about his case. And I think Minister McNeil has some serious problems with this case. Hopefully she's looking into it at this point. And talk about the internet. Our first guest coming up is one of the leading champions of internet freedom. So that's going to be a very important discussion, I think, one that's going to be educational, because when you start thinking about it, you know, I'm still one of those people that go, how does all that information get around the world so fast, right?
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully Steve Anderson will be able to tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Now, you had a busy summer so far this year?
Yeah, I've been pretty busy. You know, the weather hasn't been that great in Vancouver, but I've been working hard, and hopefully I'll get some time off soon. BC is a great province to staycation in.
Staycation.
Yeah, staycation.
Well, when the sun shines.
When the sun shines. So, I love the province, and, yeah, I'll be keeping busy. How about you?
You know, I'm kind of like you. A holiday to me is just kind of being home and not having to go anywhere. And
right.
And you don't get away from very much, regardless of where I am in the world, because of the darn internet. You know, all your work follows you. But, you know, just to have a day or two off where there's no crises brewing, you know, and you're not having to go somewhere or having to talk to people or having to answer emails, you know, I'm at that stage where that's a holiday for me.
When you can unplug, and a lot of people feel that way, with the computer, the handheld, everything in your car, if you can just kind of unplug, get away from it all, it really is therapeutic. And I really believe that as we, everybody's still kind of adapting to our new e-world, but as we evolve and as people come to understand the benefits and the consequences to being online all the time, I think people will be taking more time to unplug. And I, for one, welcome that.
Well, it's an individual that was I met up with yesterday said, "Do you know what, Carrie? They're talking about children, you know, needing more than 2.5 hours of exercise every week." Why didn't people used to get that just walking to and from school? You know, the whole issue about how we do life nowadays, Mark, is just, it defies common sense sometimes, doesn't it? I mean, people are so wrapped up, people using the technology for babysitting, all those kinds of things. I am not sure what the solution is. Well, actually, that's not true. I do know what the solution is. People have to start mind over, you know, play on a lot of these fronts.
I think so, and we don't know the results. Or the consequences, the long-term consequences of children being raised on the internet. I saw a study the other day from the States where I believe it was a pool of 8 to 10-year-olds who were plugged in. They were into social media. They had Facebook accounts. And they looked at these kids. They talked to them. And they determined that they were lacking some of the basic cognitive skills that other kids their age and past generations already owned at that age, and they attributed a lot of these deficiencies to their online activities. So,
well, you know, it's I saw a study today, and just picking up on your point, of all things, it was over Simple Simon. Do you remember the game Simple Simon? Simon Says, right?
Yeah.
And they found that children who participated in that game were, from a cognitive level, better. They knew how to take instruction. They knew how to take direction. They knew to anticipate what they were listening for, and, you know, that somebody would try to trick them. So there was a whole bunch of benefits from this simple game. And, of course, a game that a lot of kids aren't playing now because they're piped into the internet.
They're piped in. And you don't it's kind of an insidious thing. You don't really know how it's affecting you. I know myself, I've become a very poor speller over the last 7 or 8 years because I rely so heavily on my spell check on my Microsoft Word. It's pathetic now. I am a bad speller, and I wasn't like that before, so it's interesting.
Well, a lot of our habits change, and when you mention things like that, it is very true. What else I don't do anymore is I don't write letters. You know, because what's the point? You just zap off an email, those kinds of things. And yet, you know, I know for the kids and the grandkids, you know, that's a big thing to get a letter in the mail, right? Yeah. So, and I'm sure Canada Post will like that plug, you know. So all you people out there, start writing letters again.
Buy stamps. Use them.
I was going to say that there's two parts to that, isn't there? You got to buy them and you got to use them. All right, so we're just waiting to hear whether or not Steve Anderson is not picking up his phone. Maybe we should email him and see. Wayne, do you want to see if you can just go to openmedia.ca? And actually, you might be able to pick him up on our blog and just say, "Where the heck are you, Steve?" You know, cell phones, I guess, come way down the line. Well, let's talk a little bit about what we do know that's happening before the CRTC, though, and hopefully we will track down Steve Anderson at some point in the very, very near future. I did contact his public relations person today to confirm that we were on, so somebody's going to have to answer for this, I guess, right? Now, when you think of the internet, Mark, I was actually speaking to a group of people, and I said, you know, the world has changed with the Internet. When we tried to mobilize the province and the nation in previous political campaigns, for instance, I can remember standing by the fax machine, you know, fax machines that you had to feed each individual paper through.
Right.
Do you remember the fax film that used to come in rolls?
Okay.
Are you too young for that?
I think so. I know what you're talking about.
You can remember that. And, you know, where now, when you want to mobilize something, and actually this conversation came yesterday because I received a call from an individual who I spoke with probably 15 years ago when I was in a speaking tour up through Fort St. John. Carrie, how the hell are you? You know, kind of thing. And,
yeah.
You know, we got to do this. And I said, well, what are you doing? I says, well, just Google me. You know, you'll get it.
Yeah.
But still old style, you know, that, you know, just not, this isn't the tool for them.
Right.
But then you also have this other group that I spoke to about 3 weeks ago that are all, you know, 30-something, and they're just social media geniuses.
Right.
You know, the social networking thing, the Twitter, the Facebook, all of this stuff is just huge for them. And one of the things that I say often, Mark, is that, you know, if we do anything, because to mobilize Canadians politically is always a great challenge on any front, but if there's one thing that we need to make sure that we have access to and we just don't give an inch on, and that's freedom to the Internet.
I agree completely. And as a journalist, it's a huge issue for me. And it's something that I, every time I see anybody, any government official talking about taking away any Internet freedom, people have to understand that that affects everybody. That affects all of us. I remember I wrote about a really nasty fellow about 3 years ago now by the name of Brother Nathaniel. He was...
Wait, that doesn't sound so nasty.
Well, wait now. He was based... I believe he was based in Southern Ontario, and
oh,
was,
well, then he's nasty.
He's nasty.
Back
he's
there, back east.
Fan, maybe.
Oh, God forbid. Because you're just an avid Canucker, aren't
That's
you?
Right.
Yeah.
I am. Guilty as charged on that one. But so, this Brother Nathaniel, he was running an anti-Semitic website. He was a nasty piece of work. But he wasn't breaking any laws. And some lobbying groups targeted him and pressured the powers that be, who, through a very clever set of circumstances, end up pulling his ticket, essentially. He wasn't able to get an IP address. I believe that's what he wasn't able to do in Canada. All he did was pick up and move across the border and broadcast his website from the United States. But even though Brother Nathaniel's content and what he was saying was really, really, I certainly disagreed with it, I support wholeheartedly his right, in my opinion, to operate a website as long as he's not breaking any laws.
Freedom to make yourself look like an idiot, I call it.
Yes.
You know, and I think this is what I start getting concerned over when I see the Lemire case and a few other cases that are up before the courts now,
mm-hmm.
Mark, because there's a lot of cases that are hinging and going to dictate to us,
right.
You know, issues around the Internet. But for some reason, these groups that are self-appointed Carrie and Mark protectors, because mm-hmm. obviously we're too stupid to figure things out on our own, you know, I don't need you people.
Mm.
I can look at idiots like Brother Nathaniel and know that they're idiots.
Right.
I actually like to read what idiots are doing,
sure.
So I can keep up with their latest arguments and all
right.
those other things.
Right.
I think it's called constructive thinking, critical analysis, you know,
yes.
All those maybe lost arts. I don't know, Mark.
Right.
But from the people that I've met, and I get to meet a lot of Canadians as I travel around, we're a pretty clever lot on the whole, you know.
Figure it out. And you have to remember, the list of online criminals is bound to grow. If Brother Nathaniel is deemed too much for the Internet, that list will expand. He is considered anti-Semitic. People would call him that. I certainly would call him that. But if Brother Nathaniel is, if the government is allowed to shut down Brother Nathaniel, let's take the term anti-Semitic, for instance, that term can be applied down the line. So it's a slippery slope, as they say, and you got to nip it in the bud.
Yeah, and I think this is where all of these issues, and historically speaking, we have enough examples to see what happens if these little pebbles of snow start gaining momentum on these fronts. And I think this is also the issues with the human rights commissions that people are. So when you start looking for hate, prosecuting hate, building industries around the term hate, don't you have to create hate?
Yes, you do. And Ezra Levant, I think, has summed it up quite well. He's been the target of human rights tribunals in the past, where he said the right not to be offended is not a right. We can be offended walking down the street at any number of things. But if you're not breaking, in my opinion, if you're not breaking a law under the criminal code, it's free speech.
Well, but isn't that a protected right? That is one of our protected rights. You know, you don't have the right
sure.
to be free from offense,
but
you do have
the
right to free speech.
Yes, right.
So these issues, Brother Nathaniel then couldn't participate in communicating his messages of stupidity and hate around,
right.
or perceived hate.
And he didn't physically have to move. He just, his IP provider, he just ended up paying a provider from the United States to broadcast his website. So it really didn't do anything other than kind of create a bit of a chill on the internet. But he's still there. He's still, his website's still up and running. So.
Well, didn't that create a precedent here in Canada? No. Because that sort of, you know, opened the door just a little bit, didn't it?
No, I'll tell you why it didn't set a precedent, because nothing really was ever official. You had a couple of groups lobbying for legislative change, but just for the people who allow IP addresses, or I'm not quite sure the technical term, but they put one group, the Canadian Jewish Congress, put a lot of pressure on the, I believe it was the internet provider that accommodated Brother Nathaniel.
Okay.
So it was kind of a private thing. There was never any legislation that sprung from this case, so there wasn't any precedent set. And I think that the couple of these groups, including the CJC, that went after Brother Nathaniel, would only be interested in targeting people who they deem to be anti-Semitic. So it was kind of a case that didn't have a lot of didn't get any publicity outside what I wrote about it. But it's certainly an example of something that could happen down the line.
So you didn't get very many legs. So let's talk about what's happening, because this is happening as we are broadcasting this tonight, the hearings in the CRTC.
Right.
Now, the Steve Anderson, who was supposed to be with us tonight, he was one of the leading proponents. I mean, he mounted a campaign like nothing ever seen before in Canada,
right.
Raising awareness about the issue of the CRTC sort of wanting to impose itself into us citizens. And
right.
they were doing that through the regulatory body, the CRTC, but because the service providers, like most of us, my internet's supplied by TELUS.
Right.
So when we talk about this, this is where CRTC was getting its hooks into this issue. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah, and just so everybody understands, the CRTC is the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission, which regulates broadcasting and telecommunications in Canada. So they're a very powerful, powerful organization. And what I'm most concerned about with the CRTC is their political leanings and how they can make decisions based on their own political beliefs. Now, the CRTC was very hesitant in granting a digital license to Fox News, which is the conservative station in the United States. It wasn't until 2004 that they actually did that, but they were very hesitant. Their argument was based loosely on not having U.S. cable providers or networks access to Canadian markets, but that argument didn't hold any water because we were already been receiving CNN and other types of broadcasts for years. So I think they
didn't wash, you know.
I think they tipped their hand.
Is that where back to Canadians are rather clever when we have to be?
I guess so. I think they tipped their hand on that one. Exactly.
Yeah.
But they finally relented and they allowed Fox News. So I'm like any government body, you're going to have some form of corruption. And I think what our guest was going to talk about tonight, I was really going to ask him about, was how these commissioners, I believe there's 16 commissioners on the CRTC that hold the power. I'd really like to know how those commissioners are chosen, what background they have, if they're strictly political appointments, because I believe they are. They're picked by the people who are in power at the time. You know, often in Canada, because of the way our system is set up, as you know, you often find there'll be a very small number of people who aren't elected making decisions that affect the entire country.
Well, that seems to be the Canadian way, and obviously that Canadian way is pissing a lot of people off, if I can use that term. Mm-hmm. If I put the American twang on it, you know, it's not mm-hmm. so bad. But, you know, that is, we are now finding, and mostly because we have the internet so we can all talk to each other again and get information out.
Right.
But that does seem to be sort of an epidemic problem or a plague upon this nation on how we pick those that will sit in these regulatory bodies and determine what we're going to be able to watch on TV, what we're going to be able to listen to on the radio, who's going to provide our services, because they're the ones that license TELUS, Shaw. Mm-hmm. All of the service providers typically have to deal with these people.
And right now, if we go back to the internet and look at what content is allowed online, the Harper government right now is trying to ram through what's essentially an anti-internet set of laws. They'll invade your privacy. They'll cost you money. The plan is basically to force every phone and internet provider to surrender personal information to the authorities without a warrant. Okay, so it's the laws are being presented as anti-crime, anti-terrorism laws.
Well, of course, we got to fly it in under something that's going to make people, you know, be willing to give up their freedoms. Don't do it, people.
Exactly, and like you said, we have seen these similar type laws under the Patriot Act in the United States.
Yes.
Where you can really.
Why did that pop into my mind the minute you started talking down this line? I mean, these are invasive. These are totalitarian type tactics. You couldn't ask for better power for the state than what the Patriot Act provided.
Absolutely. For myself, I wouldn't want them anywhere near anything I'm doing as a journalist. That would be very disturbing to me. But I know there are regular people sitting at home saying, well, you know, if it's going to catch terrorists, if it's going to catch drug dealers, I'm okay with it. But you have to remember, if you're going to establish a bureaucracy in the government to keep an eye on everybody's computers, there's going to be people within that bureaucracy that are going to be lazy, that are going to be stupid, that might have criminal intent. You can find
anything. Not in our public service, Mark.
No.
Never.
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 You have on your computer, you have your banking records. Some people have their medical records online.
Your contact lists.
All that type of stuff. So it's really opening up a can of worms that we have to keep a hold of. And I'm afraid Mr. Harper and his you know, his zest for power, this seems like he's had his eye on this for a while. Him, Jason Kenney, a few of his cabinet ministers, they really want to clamp down on the internet, and this is kind of one of the first big steps.
Do you know what the status is of this
I'm
bill?
Not quite sure.
You know, we need to find out about that, because that is important. I've heard rumblings through it, and every once in a while people send me, Carrie, you got to do this, got to do that. And that, I think, is maybe very timely in these circumstances. But is part of the willingness of Canadians to sort of embrace this? And the other issue that came to my mind as you were speaking, Mark, is we had Michael Vaughan from the BC Civil Liberties Association on not too long ago talking about this movement to centralize all the data within the government about you and me, right? It's citizens at the center.
Right.
And doesn't that sound nice?
Oh, Orwellian.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to just get warm fuzzies.
Yeah.
Well, but Orwellian, let's talk about that. It's part of the problem and why we as Canadians are just so willing to embrace this and not stand up and just say, no, this is not part of liberty. This is not consistent with democracy. This is totally contrary to freedom.
Yeah.
This is completely contrary to what we know from our founding fathers is what we should be doing to keep the state at bay. I mean, I think the Americans at least have it with the right to arm themselves.
Yeah.
And that whole provision within their laws is because the forefathers down there recognized that government could get all powerful and you might just need to shoot somebody at some point, right?
Not that we're advocating that.
Absolutely not. But here in Canada, we have this mother government mentality. Mother government's here to take care of us. Mother government would never do anything wrong. Mother government wants to take our pictures on the streets of Vancouver. You know, what point do we say, wait a minute, this is opening doors that shouldn't be opened into the relationship between the state and the citizenry?
Well, I don't think that you're going to reach that point in Canada as long as we have the conditions that you just described, where you have a cradle-to-grave socialist society that relies on government for virtually everything. When you have that type of society, you're going to have people trusting government much more. You're also going to have a level of apathy that you don't find in the United States.
Is it apathy or complacent? Have we not educated Canadians to the point of understanding that crucial relationship between state and citizenry? You know, that seems to be lacking so often. You know, this, I often joke and say we need a personal responsibility bill, and that has resulted from the fact that, you know, we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars in court because a few people want to drink raw milk, you know.
Right.
Now, I appreciate it's not strictly about their health they're worried about. It's more about the marketing boards and their existence and justification for costing us taxpayers so many hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars every year to run. But, you know, at some point when you start looking at all these various issues and whether it's the Harper government going on the internet, it's whether our right to choose health products that we want.
Right.
I mean, we have armed police officers, RCMP officers, going into little, you know, pharmacies over in Courtney called Marigold and confiscating their products because somebody wants to buy lavender oil.
Right.
You know, when you start looking at all these different pieces to this puzzle, and we have the CRTC hearings talking about whether or not we're going to put meters on our internet and all the rest of it, isn't it at one point we should start all just kind of putting this puzzle piece together and saying maybe this isn't the Canada we want?
You would think so. I mean, you'd hope so. What I notice most about our socialist society is how it really does a disservice to people who are less fortunate. There's a soft bigotry in our system, particularly when you're dealing with, say, here in Vancouver in the downtown east side with very poor people, drug addicted. You look on native reserves around the province. We have a soft bigotry in our government where they're almost saying we're happy where you are. We're going to kind of continue this cycle of poverty, this cycle of dysfunction by giving you everything that you need just to stay alive, essentially, but not going to ask anything of you. Not going to ask you to get into the game, get into the free market. I think as far as reserves go, for me, it's always been an interesting issue. I've written about it in the past. If we gave the reserves over to Native people, truly gave them to them, so they had private ownership, private land ownership on reserves, asked them to maintain their reserves, maintain their homes because they're theirs, I think that would go a long way in solving a lot of the problems on Native reserves around BC. That's just an element.
You're going to get me on a rant that will take us away from this, but I just want to mention this because I would love to do a show next time we're on our second date, Mark Hasek. Already planning. See, it's going so well. Mm. no, I went ballistic. Somebody sent me an email recently about a project that was happening. I want to say Coquitlam, where they're building this apartment complex for a bunch of single moms, and we as taxpayers are paying for it, and Christy Clark's made this announcement, $8 million, and then they're going to fund it, the operating costs. On top of that, every year, we have to... Now, wait a minute. If you're already providing housing, giving people supposedly this leg up, shouldn't that community then be able to self-support themselves?
Yeah.
You know, where's the exactly what you're talking? Where's about, you know, the mother of necessity is the mother of all invention, if you ask me, right? You know, and I actually put out an email because, you know, I was a single mom with four kids under very, you know, hard circumstances. My husband got ill. You know, I went out and got a cow and milked the cow so I could feed my kids, you know.
Right.
Where are those things? I didn't rely on anybody else to pay for me and my kids. You know, we did what we needed to do to get the job done.
Yeah.
And that seems to be so completely, you know, not part of this disjointed society we live in. And I actually sent out an email. I think that the Father's Rights groups, hey guys, if you're listening, as I know you're fans of Roadkill, I think you should form a human rights complaint. Where's your nice apartment building? You know, why not? Let's, you know, and does it have the doggy daycare? And because the YWCA, it's got to have a pool, doesn't it? I mean, otherwise I'm going to be really disappointed. But, you know, all these issues about accommodating, we accommodate. But then on issues like freedom of communication on the Internet, we want to regulate.
Right.
So what is your understanding then of the hearings at this point? What are they talking about there, Mark?
Well, to be honest with you, I was going to rely on our guest to really fill me in on the details. I know that what these hearings were looking at were what they call big telecom, like they call big tobacco. Big telecom meaning the big providers. You mentioned TELUS, Shaw, companies like that. And to look at their infrastructure, look at how they their pricing schemes, and also to touch on what we've been talking about, internet privacy and internet freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's an issue that we're going to have to watch because, you know, this is one of the things that we love about Roadkill is our ability to do what we want, bring the information to you that other broadcasters that have to be regulated by the CRTC and big corporate Canada and all those other things, you know, they have to rely on those regulations to basically make sure there's no competition for them.
Right.
The Internet has changed a lot of that. There is great freedom. People can get their messages out now.
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, I'm just looking for Len to see whether or not we've got, no Steve Anderson. Okay. Well, I know that Derek Hoare is going to be available, so we're going to have him. The hearings that took place, though, this is, my understanding was that Steve Anderson at openmedia.ca created an online petition.
Right.
And they received a huge amount of response to that and basically forced this issue.
Yeah, and there's so much that we don't know. I mean, we're here asking each other about the Internet. There's so much that even experts like Stephen don't know because it's a very secretive industry. I know that one thing that he and others really want to find out is what is the true cost of providing Internet service?
Mm-hmm.
Because the industry changes so rapidly, like on a monthly basis, the costs are not stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
Surely they've become more efficient in the way that they're providing the service. We don't know how much it costs for big companies like TELUS to essentially create the infrastructure to provide service to people at home like us.
We know they're not losing money.
They're not losing money. I can guarantee you that,
Carrie. Yeah. But the question is, how are they going to get this little door open to start, you know, and this is my fear, Mark, because TELUS always relies, for instance, on the CRTC. We've been approved for this rate increase, as if that's supposed to give us some confidence that somebody looked at the issues and it was legitimate and all the rest of it. There's a psychological little game going on there, right? It's like if I say, well, we're going to, you know, my position is this and Mark backs me up on that, you know,
right.
We got two for my side, you know,
right.
And there's only one of you, consumer, you know. But my fear is if they get this little door that's open, that the door is going to swing pretty wide pretty quick.
Absolutely, it will. I mean, if history teaches us anything, is that censorship is bound to grow. It's just that's the nature of censorship. The government machine, when it comes to, and Doug Christie, our guest down the line, he can certainly speak to this. When the government gets a taste for taking away and taking control, it's never satisfied. It's like a beast that it's constantly feeding. So the Internet really is kind of the last bastion of freedom in a lot of ways, and it's something that everybody should be concerned about and everybody should protect vigilantly, because an Internet that's not free is, in this day and age, really is a society that's not free. We exist online these days. Look at what's going on in China.
Mm-hmm.
The control of the internet in China has a great effect on...
What internet?
Exactly. Has a great effect on society there.
Yes.
You look at what happened in the Arab countries a couple of months ago. Because they had, although limited, but they did have access to the internet, social networking sites, Facebook, they were able to spawn a revolution that would probably have been impossible 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So the internet is vastly important, and yes, these issues are huge.
We've got an email, and Wayne raises some interesting points here. He says, I like getting stuff for free, as much as the guy next door. But something bothers me about this. Getting the government to ban bandwidth charges so that people who desperately need exercise can veg on the couch. Why shouldn't the government subsidize people to watch movies and porn and play video games? Is it just government creating a dependency for bread and circuses to keep the mob occupied? He has a solution for this, of course. Remove government control of media supply and monopoly. Dump the CRTC and the CHR and Heritage Canada.
I would be for all of those things.
Yeah, let's
that
vote.
Sounds great. Yeah. Thank you, Wayne.
But you know what? Isn't that the discussion we really should be having?
It is, but you remember where we are, where we're living. We're living in Canada, where everything needs to be regulated, everything needs to be taxed. I'm actually shocked that there isn't that the internet hasn't been attacked by the tax man yet. I remember in 1999, 2000, there was a big discussion about down in the States about that very thing. But here we are in 2011, and I guess people have gotten the message. They know how important the internet is. But can you imagine if you were taxed, say, any time you searched for something or got on to a certain website? It's an interesting thing that newspapers are adapting to the internet, and free services like Roadkill Radio are doing so well. It really is the information highway. What can I say?
Well, it's interesting. I want to pick up on one point, and then we'll move on to our next guest. But Wayne mentioned the CRTC and the CHRC, the Canadian Human Rights Commission. Well, we've had a little bit of an ongoing saga here with Terry O'Neill. He's been trying to get information about a case that involved a number of gay activists that were trying to get more funding, so they made a complaint against the Department of Health and said, you know, we have all these added diseases because of our lifestyle practices. And they listed them all, the problems that they have as a result of anal sex and all the rest of it. And this goes back 2 years ago, this complaint. Well, Terry has been trying over and over and over again, diligently, just, you know, the soldier in the war there on behalf of Canadians, trying to find out the status of this case, because nobody has heard anything about it for 2 years. Well, this week, and he said, I can mention this, he got a response, and they confirmed that the case is alive and well, but they won't give him any information because, as they say, the case is before the Canadian Human Rights Commission. Now, when you start looking at some of these cases that are using public taxpayer resource, our money, to be heard, trying to get more, and just today there was a big case here on the BC front where a lawyer successfully sued the Law Society for $100,000. You know, this is where courts used to play a role, right? And there was some rules of evidence and all the rest of it that should really have come into play in some of these issues, where these commissions are just basically kangaroo courts for a lot of purposes. We can't get information about this case. We will continue to try. Now, we have in the past obtained information because I've intervened in some cases, and then that way they have to give you the information in order to make your application to intervene. So I'm not sure what we're going to do about this case, people, but Terry O'Neill sent along this message that he wanted you to be updated. We have progress. We have a victory of sorts because we do have the information now. But the complaint before the Canadian Human Rights Commission involving those activists that Terry O'Neill has been diligently pursuing is alive. And What concerns me is it's so quiet, so you wonder what deal is being made behind the scenes, Mark, right?
Isn't that so true?
It is.